All right, now before we get started with today's show, I wanted to share with everyone something I thought you might be interested in. Last week on the Woj Pod, Jalen Rose joined to chat about former NBA Commissioner David Stern and his passing. Can't think of two people more qualified to weigh in on his legacy and how he changed the course of the league for the better, so be sure to check that one out. Also, download the Woj Pod and The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. That's what NetSuite by Oracle is set out to solve. Because most companies don't have a clear picture of their finances, and that's why many businesses fail. Question for any business owner out there is, are you confident that you've got the right numbers at your fingertips? Serious entrepreneurs and finance teams run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. NetSuite offers a full picture of all your finances, all in one place, in real time, right from your phone or your desktop. No more guessing. No more worry that what you don't know could kill your company. That's why NetSuite customers grow 3 times faster than the S&P 500, and you can too. Schedule your free demo right now and receive their free guide, 7 Key Strategies to Grow Your Profits at netsuite.com/Bomani. Set up your free demo and get your free guide today at netsuite.com/Bomani. netsuite.com/Bomani. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about what's next for Tom Brady. I'm going to talk to the Saints fans. I can't wait. But first. All right, Gabe, I'm just curious, you know, do you have any, like, opinion on the Cowboys?
You mean America's team, the Cowboys?
Yes, those Cowboys.
The whole America's team moniker is a little silly.
But they are America's team. I don't know why people can't acknowledge that fact. They are, in fact, America's team. All right, here, I'll put it to you like this, and tell me what you think about this idea. There are 32 teams in the NFL, all right? One is in Dallas, 31 everywhere else. If the Cowboys went on a barnstorming tour in the other 31 cities and they did not play against the home team, they just played against any other team in the NFL, that game would sell out and that game would overwhelmingly be populated by Cowboys fans. Right? The thing about the Cowboys is, and I think it can be somewhat difficult for people to think of this in the like post-expansion. There hasn't been that much expansion in my life, but you'll still get where I'm coming from here. Cowboys are the most popular team in America in places that don't have dots. You know what I mean? Like if your city didn't have a team for the longest, so Memphis, for example. In Memphis, the two most popular teams are the Cowboys and the Steelers. That's their squads. You start talking to people from Memphis, they're either down with the Cowboys or they're down with the Steelers. That's how that goes. I don't know if that stretch out to the rest of Tennessee prior to the Titans getting there. I have no idea, but that's how it works in those places. But you go around everywhere, and the most popular team is the Dallas Cowboys. There's a reason why we talk about them all the time. I was talking to a cat the other day. He used to play in the league, and he's just like, damn, the playoffs just went off, and First Take is talking about the Cowboys because people care about the Cowboys, man. The game is more fun by having the Cowboys around, and you got to admit, the idea of Jason Garrett getting fired, showing back up to work, and then having to fire him again, and then him showing back up to work, and then they keep having to fire him, you got to admit, that's not only entertaining, but you'd only really know those details if they happen to the Dallas Cowboys. You got to be real about that part. Then you get the story about Mike McCarthy staying at Jerry Jones's house overnight and then winding up getting the job. Come on, man. This only happens with the Cowboys, man. It's the only place that you wind up in this situation, right? They stand out not so much as being better than everybody else, but because they branded this different than anybody else. Now, there was a stretch where they would get this done in large part because they were better than everybody else. Gabe, did you know that Tom Landry had a stretch where the Cowboys were over 500 for literally 20 years in a row?
I was not aware of that.
20 years in a row. That 70s through the mid-80s stretch of the Cowboys, they were good every year, and they had stars every year. So they went from being like the upstart franchise in the 60s where you got the Ice Bowl and all of that stuff to becoming that team that got there to being that team that stayed there. And then even when it fell apart, like we talk about the run when the Cowboys were sorry, the Cowboys were sorry from like 86 to 90 and then for like the Dave Campbell years. Otherwise, contrary to what anybody says, they've been pretty relevant for the rest of the time. There's been reasons for us to talk about them, like the Jason Garrett run. You go back and look at that year to year. It's a lot better than you remember. Do you realize that Jason Garrett only had one losing season with the Cowboys? That was it. Just one. That's where they were, you know? So now they got a new coach. They hired Mike McCarthy. He used to coach the Green Bay Packers. I'm not inclined to think this is a great hire just because my thinking is, big part of what doomed Jason Garrett was a lack of imagination on offense. That he was the ceiling on an offense with all of that talent. That's the thing that got Mike McCarthy fired in Green Bay, was being the ceiling on the offense. And the offense was his. Like, he's bringing it with him. He's going to want to call the plays. And I think I've talked to you before. I personally would not want a head coach who calls plays. I feel like my head coach would be too busy. All these other head coaches got all kinds of stuff to occupy their time during the game, not to be out here calling no plays. Like, I feel like you should have other things that you should be doing right now rather than calling the plays. That's how I feel. But Mike McCarthy's going to come in here. He's going to call the plays. And basically, he's in the Freddie Kitchens seat. And I mean that in the sense that, not that I think that he's going to get fired if they don't make the playoffs after this season, but they looking at you like, hey, homie, it's time to make the playoffs. Like, there ain't going to be no building action. You're not going to walk into this job and explain how you got to tear down the culture and build up a new one. Nah, bruh, you're going to need to come out here and you're going to need to get these dubs. And to be honest, at least offensively, I don't feel like there's an excuse for you to not get those dubs. That offensive line isn't as good as it had been at points. Tyron Smith starting to break down a little bit. Travis Frederick starting to break down a little bit. You know, so this is not the impenetrable offensive line that many people have dreamed of this ultimately becoming. We're not at that place with it. But, you know, this is a team that is supposed to win some games. This is a team that should win some games. Now, this is a team that's probably going to have some cap issues because they're going to have to pay Dak. They already paid Ezekiel Elliott. They're going to have to pay Amari Cooper. They're going to figure some things out in order to get this whole thing going. But it's all set up for Mike McCarthy. Like, you won, homie. You won. Now, let me ask you this, Gabe. You heard the story about him staying at Jerry Jones' house, and people are like, when you stay at Jerry gets you over at your house, over at his house, it's a wrap, which doesn't sound like hiring, but whatever. What'd you think about that?
I immediately thought of when DeAndre Jordan got like locked in his house in Houston for that like free agency period with Blake and CP3. It was my favorite part of the story.
Here's what I wanted to know about this. What time did the night end when Mike McCarthy decided that he was going to stay at Jerry's house, assuming that he decided that he was going to stay at Jerry's house?
I mean, there had to have been some cigars, some whiskey.
That's what I'm saying, right? That's what I'm saying.
Cherry wood walls.
Yeah.
Mahogany.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this is the way I look at that whole situation. So you go kick it with Jerry. Y'all talk about the job, right? And everything goes so well in talking about the job that you ultimately get the job. You know what that means, that Jerry's breaking out at the end of the night? I've been reading about Jerry. That means Jerry breaking out that Johnny Walker Blue. That's what he liked. He liked that Johnny Walker Blue. You know about that blue, Gabe?
I'm familiar.
I've never been around the blue. I ain't never been around nobody classy enough to actually have like the Johnny Walker Blue around when I was there. But that's what Jerry doing. Jerry drinking that Johnny Walker Blue. You got to drink the Johnny Walker Blue too. At what point are you allowed to tell Jerry, no, I've had enough to drink?
Are you allowed?
That's what I'm saying. Now, who knows? McCarthy spent a lot of time up there in Wisconsin, so he know a lot about knocking them back, right? They drinking a different way up there. It's the combination of being up there in the cold, plus they got that whole French thing going from, like, ancestry and stuff like that. It's like Louisiana, except what if they was freezing? Like, I remember when LSU went up to Wisconsin to play at Lambeau Field, and they basically sold out of alcohol in the whole little area when that went down. Yeah, man, it's the kind of situation. Now, man, I think Mike McCarthy was in there like, please, I hope he doesn't ask me for it if I want to. Oh.
Could that have been like the final test? Can McCarthy drink with Jerry? And if he can, then he gets the job.
Now, I think that the test was whether he'd say no. Not so much whether he could drink with Jerry, but whether he was willing to drink with Jerry. Because I can't speak for nobody else, but the times in my life where I've wound up and had to stay over at somebody's house, it wasn't just because I was having such a good time. It was because I couldn't leave. Not because he wouldn't let me leave, because I could not leave. You think they made McCarthy get a rental car when he got off the plane? Or you think they sent a driver? You think he was being transported around? Or you think he was pushing it around there in a Kia Forte or something like that?
He was for sure getting picked up.
I don't know, man. You never know, man. These rich folks get cheap in some weird places, right? Maybe that could have been what it was, that Mike McCarthy was like, look, I would leave, but then I won't be the coach because y'all going to have to fire me before y'all hire me. So maybe I could just crash in here. I bet the room he was in was plush, too.
Yeah, I would. That's like an interesting bar. You were talking about like rich people get cheap in different ways. How posh is the guest room in a rich person's house?
It is posh. Because that's something they stunt, right? Like that stuff for work, he ain't going to do that. But that right there, that's going to be something that they stunt. That guest room is going to be fire. And there's no telling what he has, like, to decorate in the guest room. So, for example, my buddy Tony Kornheiser, you know, he's won Emmys for Pardon the Interruption. Gabe, did you know that I have an Emmy?
I was not aware that you had an Emmy.
I have an Emmy. I got an Emmy for producing a 30 for 30.
Oh, okay. Got it.
But see, here the thing, though, right? I can't think of no good place to put my Emmy, so I just kind of keep it in a case. You know where Tony Kornheiser keeps his Emmy?
It's on the desk at PTI, right?
I think that is an Emmy. That's not his.
Okay.
The guest bathroom.
Wow, all right. Different level of stunt.
Because he's stunting on you. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So there's no telling what Jerry has over there in that guest room. You think it's a queen-size bed or a king-size bed?
Gotta be king. California king.
I would think, man, because, like, for me, I'm a little too big or long, rather, for queen-size beds. Like, I dangle from queen-size beds. So maybe that's it, right? Maybe that's what he's got. I don't know. But I don't think that man stayed there because the interview went so good. I think he stayed there because the drinking went so long. That would be my guess as to why he stayed over there at Jerry's house. Also, shout out to Jerry. Jerry got it right this time. He was like, we have to call the black guy first. It looks bad if we call him after. So they called Marvin Lewis. Who, by the way, I think could have been a very good hire for them. And you know why? Because if you believe that the number one job coaching the Dallas Cowboys is to operate in spite of ownership, who has more experience working in spite of ownership than Marvin Lewis? Right. Who has more experience working around the whims of his owner than Marvin Lewis does? Like, I think he could have been a good guy for that job. If everybody, but he never won a playoff game. You go win a playoff game with Andy Dalton. You go let me know how it works out winning a playoff game with Andy Dalton as your quarterback. Just let me know. Will you hear Carson Palmer? Remember that time Carson Palmer was in the playoffs with the Bengals and got his ACL torn in like the first minute of the game? Yeah, I remember that. I thought you guys had remembered that, too. Anyway, but I would like the Cowboys to be, like, legitimately really good. We all have to acknowledge the league is better when the Cowboys are really good. Can we all admit that?
We can admit that.
I mean, they're a polarizing unit. Like, I don't even have an affection for the Cowboys in one way or another, but they're a polarizing unit. They get people charged up. Business is better when the Cowboys are good. That's why I kind of wish they'd hired a better coach. Cowboys... I guess Bill Parcells was a good coach, though I think he was like at the end of the line, really. Cowboys ain't had a good coach since I was in high school. High school. Come on, man. Give us something. I am here for it. And how about this? How funny would it have been, now that I think about it, Gabe, if they had done the press conference the day after the night at Jerry's house and Mike McCarthy would have got on at the podium and just been like, wow, I got a headache.
You would have imagined that he would have asked to reschedule that press conference for later in the afternoon.
Yo, can somebody
get some beauty sleep?
Can somebody turn down the lights?
Can I get a water?
Yeah, man. Good.
And an OJ?
Yeah, man. No. I just didn't have time to shave. That's all. All right, we'll be back to talk about Tom Brady's future. But first, it's a new year. Perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding qualified candidates can be challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani makes it easy. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Nobody wants to say Tom Brady is washed because it's an awkward, difficult thing to say Tom Brady is washed. And I know why we don't want to say Tom Brady is washed. We don't want to say Tom Brady is washed for the same reason that we don't want to entertain the possibility that somebody in the NBA is a better basketball player than LeBron James. And the reason is we have said this before, and after we said it before, we wound up looking kind of foolish. I remember that game against the Kansas City Chiefs. I believe it was in 2014 where Brady looked super washed. The Patriots looked super washed. We were sure that they were done, and then they won the Super Bowl that year. It's very much so in line with that time that we thought that Steph Curry had become the best player in the NBA, and then the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead in the finals, and I think LeBron averaged a triple-double or something crazy like that, and it was like, yo, I can't be the one to be out here saying somebody better than LeBron James, right? That is where I think we are with Tom Brady. We tried to call it once, and it did not happen, but the thing is, the time that we tried to call it before was like 5 years ago. I feel like we're kind of in a situation now where we should be able to do the math on this and look at that dude and say that dude is washed. But Gabe, no. I don't know if you've seen this coming out of the year. Now we're starting to get the reports. Apparently something was wrong with his foot, and they said he had tennis elbow, which is tendonitis. And it's all setting up perfectly. It's setting up for Tom Brady to try to, like, push off the not so great performance that he had in 2019 and say it was because he had these little nagging injuries, and then he's going to wind up going to another team because I think it's a wrap for him with the Patriots, and then he's going to go to that new team, and then when he show up in August, you know what he's going to say? I don't know, guys. I feel like I'm in the best shape of my career.
Oh, boy.
I haven't felt this good in 10 years. He going to break out the full all old people playbook. They always ain't never felt this good in however many years. And he is done. I was amazed at how many people came out of that game against the Titans, and so much of the discussion was about how those guys could not get separation. And I'm not saying necessarily that they could. I'm not making the argument that the Patriots have better receivers than they're given credit for having. I am saying, however, I have seen times where they have had separation, and the thing that they were more separate from than the receiver was the ball. I mean, than the defender was the ball. Like, not every time that a throw wasn't made was because Tom Brady's guys weren't getting open. Some of that was because he was out there looking washed. Oh, my bad. He had tennis elbow. So maybe we gonna put it on that. But I don't know if you know this about old people. I don't know if you know this about getting old. I'm not as old as Tom Brady, but I'm knocking on the door of 40. And let me tell you something. Little stuff break all the time, right? Like, I used to have this car when I was in high school. I feel like I shouldn't say the make and model. Nah, I can say it. It's been as long as it was. So when I was in high school, I used to push a 89 Corolla, right? That's what I pushed, the 89 Corolla. And, you know, you see them commercials where them folks be showing their odometers and they be jumping up and making the one with their bodies. You know, Gabe, you young enough to remember the Toyota commercials where they, like, show you the engine that had gone over, like, 1,000,000 miles.
I do not remember.
Yeah, because that's the thing about the Toyotas, that the engine will run forever. That's always been their hook. And they had the people, and they jump up, and they put one hand in the air, and they split their legs out to the side. It's kind of like the jump man, but they trying to be like one. You know what I mean? That's what they was going for with the Corolla. And maybe that engine can run for 1,000,000 miles, but let me tell you what did not run for 1,000,000 miles on that car. The door handles. That was the thing. It was little stuff. The door handles. The window, the joint to roll it up and down, because I had to roll it. Those are the little things. Those are the things that break as that bad boy gets old. And I bet the engine of Tom Brady, the soul of Tom Brady. Oh, man, I bet that thing can run for 1,000,000 miles. That TB12 method working like hell on that. But the door handles, that right there is where it's going to get tricky. Man, I once wound up at a point, Gabe, with it, inside and outside on the door handles. I once wound up at a point with that car where the outside door handles had broke on both sides, and then the inside door handle broke too. Because I was like having to like open the car and then open the back door and then go through the front. You ain't never had to do that before?
I haven't had to do that
before.
Yeah,
I've been there. A couple of whips, in fact, where this is just the kind of thing you can do. But hey, no, man, that's the thing. Like Tom Brady's body trying to hit the thing to shoot the windshield wiper fluid out there. It ain't coming. It's just dry. He in that thing, and that wiper's scraping against the windshield, all of that stuff, man, because these are the little things that break along the way. So we keep hearing about people talking about, well, where could Tom Brady go next year? I forget what story it was I read. It may have been the Peter King one, where they're talking about these teams that have cap room, and, you know, maybe he can go somewhere and get somebody to pay him like $35 million a year. They're like, the Patriots, well, how much money are the Patriots going to be willing to pay Tom Brady? And I'm like, yo, when he was really good, you didn't want to pay him a lot so that you'd have money to get other people. He's not really good anymore. You really need money to go get other people. Like, if this idea is, well, we got to get Brady some help around him. Yo, you can't get Brady help and get him like $30 million a year. That's not going to work at all. That seems like the most counterproductive idea in the world. The dude just seems to be done. And it's the wildest thing about quarterbacks. We're so slow to recognize when a quarterback is done, because a quarterback can massage some things after being done that'll still wind up being like good numbers, that you'll be able to read it off a sheet and you'll still think that the guy has it. Like, if you go look at Brady's numbers, even go look at Phillip Rivers' numbers this year. I think Phillip Rivers is still averaging something like 7.8 yards per attempt or something like that. Like, you go back and look at the numbers, it'll tell you a story that's not in line with what your eyes are telling you. And so now with Brady, those numbers might be okay, but keep in mind, these injuries they told us about, these are injuries that he sustained, even though if you watch them play much this year, it was obvious he was doing whatever he could to avoid whatever hit was coming. Whatever hit was coming, Tom Brady was making a move so that he wasn't going to have to deal with that, and the door handles still broke. The door handles still broke. This is not good. This is not a good sign for him. And is he really, and I guess everybody does this, right? Just about every guy in his situation does this. Is Tom Brady willing to give us the satisfaction of watching him have a fall off season? Like, Warren Moon never really had a fall off season because he smoothly transitioned into that backup role. And then he popped up as an old man and made a Pro Bowl one time, right? Like, he's the guy that managed to avoid it. Troy Aikman had a bit of a fall off season, but it didn't just jump off the screen in that same way. He also was younger. He wound up leaving, because of head injuries. But you go around the league, man, old heads will tell you about it. Joe Namath playing with the Rams, Johnny Unitas playing for the Chargers. Joe Montana, yeah, I didn't think his last year with Kansas City was necessarily that bad, but is Tom Brady going to let us see him in some jersey that we don't think Tom Brady should ever be out here wearing? He going to let us see him out here getting rocked? These cats taking these picks back to the house? Is he going to allow us to witness that? Like, I've heard people try to say that maybe what happens is Josh McDaniels goes somewhere and then he brings Tom Brady with him. Yo, Josh McDaniels ain't blind, is he? He done got to see this closer than any of us saw this. Gabe, if you, Josh McDaniels, you bringing this old man with you?
That's not exactly setting yourself up for the future.
Sometimes when you move into a new house, you need to get a new couch. You ever been there? You're like, yo, I can't bring this couch into my new place. My new place is far too nice. Like, that's what it is. You can't bring that old couch in there. Ain't no way in the world you can go ahead and make that happen. What I want to know, though, I'm curious what you think. What in the world are the Patriots supposed to do when Brady ain't there?
Well, they don't really have a plan per se that we can point to, right? There's no waiting in the wings right now.
They drafted Jarrett Stidham last year.
Yeah.
Never been a time that I thought I was looking at an NFL quarterback in college when I saw Stidham or anything that I've seen with his little bit with the Patriots. Never thought that that was the guy that we were seeing. So what's Bill Belichick look like if he doesn't have Tom Brady? Because to be fair, I saw Bill Belichick with Matt Castle and they went 11-5. But I bet you Tom Brady wants to leave and then be like, yeah, watch what they do without me. Bill Belichick gonna go 12-4. We just don't throw the ball anymore. We hand the ball off over and over again, and I guess it works.
Do you think Phillip Rivers is toast?
Yes.
Okay, so there can't be like a swap thing of old man quarterbacks going on here between Phillip Rivers and Brady going to the Chargers.
Well, see, I don't think that Belichick would take the old man, but the Chargers need to sell tickets. You know, like maybe that would be their plan. I think all these old guys are done. I think Drew Brees is done, but not like Drew Brees is obviously not unplayable. Like, he's not done to that degree, But I got real questions about whether you can still win a Super Bowl with Drew Brees. That nickel and dime action can only take you so far. I think that Ben Roethlisberger is done. I think that Phillip Rivers is done. Obviously, Eli Manning was done. I think that Tom Brady is done. Did I get all the old dudes?
I think you did.
Oh, Alex Smith, he's done. But we knew that. Aaron Rodgers, maybe not done. Certainly not great. And so after him, like, who's that next wave? We talked about this before. Who's that next wave of, like, middle-aged quarterbacks that we get out here talking about? Is it what, Matt Ryan? Because think about this. Matt Ryan got drafted in the same year as Joe Flacco. And we all think Joe Flacco is done. Like, all those dudes are out of there. Now look up. Have you looked at the quarterback bracket in the AFC? It's a whole lot of, oh, word. Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, and Ryan Tannehill. You got three dudes that look like the Revolution and one dude that used to play wide receiver and has been better than we ever thought he could be. Like welcome to 2020 is what the AFC says. Meanwhile, over there in the NFC, it's looking paltry. Kirk Cousins, Jimmy Garoppolo, this version of Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. Like, I'm picking Seattle to win the NFC, and the reason is, which of those other quarterbacks are you really putting faith in? Like, I feel like whoever wins this Seattle-Green Bay game, they're the only ones that's got a quarterback I can halfway trust. Like, I imagine that San Francisco is going to stomp Minnesota. And then it's going to be like, you think that Kyle can scheme this up enough that Jimmy Garoppolo can overcome and be the quarterback to win over either a team led by Russell Wilson or a team led by Aaron Rodgers. You betting on that?
Well, they stomped the Packers earlier in the season.
They did, but that ain't now. Like, I feel you. You're not wrong. But I feel like we've been doing this long enough to know that ain't now. It is not. So we going to see. We going to see where all of this goes. But I think the quarterback guard is changing everywhere. And that means time's up for Tom Brady. All right, guys, I don't want to take too long here. I don't know if you guys saw this, but there was a playoff game on, I believe it was Saturday, and it was between the, no, it was Sunday, excuse me, it was Sunday. It was between the New Orleans Saints and the Vikings of Minnesota. I'd like to start, shout out to Kirk Cousins. They needed a big throw. He made the big throw, put it exactly where it had to be. Good for him, right? Way to go. Good throw, Kirk Cousins. I think a lot of y'all, you know, Gabe, you know I got some history with like the whole Kirk Cousins story.
Oh, yes.
But here's what gets me about that. And I'm being serious when I make this point. If you read anything that I had to say about the issues as they surrounded Robert Griffin and Kirk Cousins when they were in Washington, I never, like, rooted against Kirk Cousins. I never had any problem with Kirk Cousins. I had a problem with what seemed pretty clearly to me to be two guys who were being covered in completely different ways, and it was fair to raise a question as to whether race was the variable in the way that those two dudes were being discussed, in the way that one shortcomings were being highlighted and the shortcomings of the other were being ignored and pushed away, right? That was what it was. But what gets me is how many people assume that that means that I got some level of personal animus toward Kirk Cousins. Like, do y'all really, like, actually dislike these people that y'all don't know? Like, do y'all really sit around at your cribs and root against these people that you do not know? Because if you do, live your life, but don't think I'm as whack as you are. Like, and I think that's something that happens to people who observe me in this job very often, is that you operate on this flawed assumption that I'm as whack as you are. And that ain't the case. If I was as whack as you are, you wouldn't love me so much. Right? I mean, that's just kind of how it goes. That's just where it is. And so, the Vikings beat the Saints, and I got some people talking about me. Why don't you say something about Kirk Cousins? I'm like, fool, do you know anything about me? The Saints just got eliminated from the playoffs, and you think that my mind is on Kirk Cousins right now? Did you know that Kirk Cousins was my fantasy quarterback? If I got a reason to be mad at him and the rest of them Vikings, is that when the playoffs, the real playoffs was going on, I couldn't get nothing out of you. Adam Thielen couldn't tough it out for me during the playoffs, but you're going to do it for Mike Zimmer? All right, I see how you do. That's cool. What's his name? Dalvin Cook. But you think this is what matters? Right here? It's about something bigger than you, son. I don't understand why you don't understand. This ain't just about you, right? People needed you in those last couple weeks. Fight. Be a man, right? And then Kirk Cousins. See, now I'm getting mad at him because I'm thinking about that. My point being, I am far more likely to be mad at somebody for what they do to my fantasy team than I am going to be about, like, their actual performance in these games, right? So Kirk Cousins makes a big throw. I'm going to tell you Kirk Cousins made a big throw. Why? Because the throw ain't going to be no smaller because I pretend it didn't happen. Ain't no victory in that for me. I can't win. I can only win in this if you believe that what I'm saying is what I believe to actually be the truth. So I'm always going to give you what I believe to be the truth on these matters. And with Cousins, look, man, he's much better. I still don't think he's very good, but he's much better than I ever thought that he was going to be. I did not think that he would be a guy who would start in the league. Now this is, I believe, this sixth year as a starter or fifth year as a starter. I never thought that would happen. Like, I'm already wrong. Ain't no need to fight that part, right? Like, nothing's going to happen that's going to change the fact that I didn't think this dude could start in the league, and he has been starting in the league. I ain't never going to be able to correct that, right? So, you know, there you go. Hooray, Kirk Cousins. And now let's laugh at the Saints. Saints fans. I'm being serious about this. I need you guys to help me out here. Why aren't y'all marching about this one? Like, was the loss last year just so debilitating? Did it take so much out of your souls when they didn't make that pass interference call that you can't even be mad this time about the fact that it seemed pretty obvious that it was pass interference again and it still wasn't called? Like, that was offensive pass interference. It seemed pretty clearly and obviously to be offensive pass interference. And I got to say this for the Saints fans. I was trying to get them riled up on the internet about the pass interference call, and they didn't do it. They didn't go for it. You know, I had a few people tell me, you know, various things, you know, me, die, eat a d-. I got it all, right? I heard all those things. You know, I got all that. But nobody really got on the bandwagon I was trying to start, which is that you have been mistreated by the NFL, and they installed a mechanism that's supposed to prevent such a thing to happen in the face of pass interference, and it still went down at your house, and y'all still lost on the basis of that, and I think you got real reason to be mad. And I was going to be right there mad with you, but y'all ain't even mad about that. And then it dawned on me, it can only be because your heart couldn't take anymore. Your heart took so much last year. I was at the Super Bowl last year. I saw the people who had already bought their tickets to the Super Bowl. I saw them walking around in Saints jerseys. I mean, they had to feel ridiculous. And maybe there's just no way for you to come back after something like that and invest your heart and soul in that same way into your team. Maybe that's what it is, right? And if that's the case, I really feel bad for y'all. Except I kind of feel good for you, because maybe that's a good place for you to be. Maybe that's a good detached place for you to be, and you can enjoy the victories and not get so caught up in the losses as it's happened before. I mean, it's not like you felt miserable the last 2 or 3 days, is it? It's not as though you just felt like somebody had been punching you in the stomach with this, right? It's not as though you were watching that game and feeling good about how it was going in for you, and then next thing you know, y'all let Kirk Cousins throw a deep pass on you and it gets bombed out. I mean, there's no way that felt bad. You probably took that, just shrugged it off. Like, hey, baby, it's another day in the life. That's how you felt, right? Right? It has to be. Like, if I were you, I mean, that would be the way that I would approach this matter. And so I am glad for all you Saints fans who have found a way to separate yourself. I mean, when you stop and think about the fact that your quarterback is getting older every single day, and they had to bring out Gadget Man to throw the ball deep, because you know that your quarterback can't really throw the ball deep like that. They had to do all kinds of jerry rigging. That's how we'll say it here. We had to do all kinds of that in order to keep that offense moving. Michael Thomas got all them catches, but didn't have to run very far, right? He just turned 5 yards, turned straight around, man, because that's where Drew Brees could throw the ball. But y'all was still finding a way to get that done. Like, if it was me and we had the franchise quarterback that was like a hero in my city, and my team just blew what is our last, like, real chance to win a Super Bowl with him here, because he ain't going to get no better, I personally would be, like, moved to tears. And then if I thought about it from another level, the Saints were 13-3. Gabe, did you know that that's the first time a 13-3 team has had to play in the first weekend of the season?
I did not know that.
This is the first time a 13-3 team has had to play in the first weekend of the playoffs. Not the season, rather, but the playoffs. And you know why the Saints had to play that game? They had to play that game because they lost to the 49ers. That's the way most people look at it. They lost that game to the 49ers. They left them tied in the record. The 49ers had the tiebreaker. But you know what? It wouldn't have had to come to the tiebreaker necessarily. Right? It didn't have to be that. They could have still lost to the 49ers in that game and still gotten a bye. Still could have done that. And you know how they could have done that? all they had to do was beat the Falcons at home. You remember that, Saints fans? You remember that? You guys were playing the Falcons at home and got smoked. Like, it wasn't even like, no, I don't recall it being no close game neither. As I recall, y'all got y'all's asses kicked at home by the Falcons. If you had only won that game, you wouldn't have had to see no parts of Minnesota. All you had to do was beat the Falcons, and all I ever hear from y'all is how sorry the Falcons are. And I don't mind hearing y'all talk about how sorry the Falcons are. I'm off that narcotic. But I hear y'all talk about it all the time. Falcons so whack. Falcons can't make the playoffs. Everything else. All those things. Largely true. Why did you lose to them? If you hadn't lost to them, you'd be sitting pretty right now. Your team would be rested up. Cats would have spent all last week just sitting under ice packs, drinking what's that, what they call it, the kombucha? They'd have been doing all of that, taking all kinds of natural herbal remedies, just resting up. You know what I mean? They wouldn't have no concern about what was going on out there. But y'all lost to the Falcons. So I feel like this season put together for the Saints everything that you'd have to hate or fear. Drew Brees, getting old. Losing to the Falcons. Getting robbed by the referees. Somebody hit me on Twitter, Gabe. They was like, yo, how you going to be hating and you outside the club? I'm like, I might have been outside the club, but I just saw security toss you and all y'all partners out. You out here with us, as in if you could have a drink. You can't.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from tech.
My name is Jay Green, and I'm a technology reporter in Seattle for the Washington Post. I wrote last week about Amazon warning some employees who had criticized the company's environmental policies that they could be fired for future violations of its communications rules. Two workers who I quoted in an October article about Amazon's environmental initiatives got a talking to and a letter from a lawyer in the company's employee relations group that accused them of violating its external communications policy. The lawyer told the workers if they spoke again about Amazon's business in a public forum without prior approval, that they could be subject to what he called formal corrective action up to and including termination of your employment with Amazon. That got the employees' attention. One of the workers, Marin Costa, told me it was scary to be called into a meeting like that and getting a threatening letter as a follow-up. But she also said she wouldn't be silenced. Costa called it her moral responsibility to speak up because the crisis of climate change is so dire. And she said she'd continue to do so regardless of what she called Amazon's attempt to censor us.
I should note that Amazon chief executive Jeff Bezos owns my publication, The Washington Post.
The subject of Amazon's environmental practices came to a head last September when more than 1,000 employees walked off the job to join climate change rallies around the globe. A group of workers called Amazon Employees for Climate Justice is pushing the company to commit to being carbon neutral by 2030, to end cloud computing contracts that help energy companies accelerate oil and gas extraction, and to stop funding politicians and lobbyists who deny climate change. Amazon has had a policy in place that requires pre-approval for public comments from workers, but it hasn't routinely enforced that policy, particularly with members of the climate group. The company said in a statement to me that it wants workers to suggest improvements to how it does business through what it called internal channels. The news of Amazon's warnings to those employees has reverberated. Presidential candidates Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have both tweeted in support of the workers.
So, what the hell did they think was going to happen when they was out here criticizing the boss in front of people? Like, am I missing something here, Gabe?
No, you're not missing anything. I mean, if I feel like if you work for a corporation, you have to sign lots of different things when you are hired that say that you're not going to speak out against the company or whatever.
Yeah, even if you didn't sign them, like, that's a reasonable, I don't think that's an unreasonable expectation. Like, I'm with them on the cause, and I'm, like, with the idea of making, like, that internal push. I'm all the way down here for this. And honestly, I don't have a problem, to be clear, with them criticizing the boss in public, right? If that's what they decide they want to do, if they bite it like that, then I'll stand with them in their ability to do it. But when the woman was like, yeah, I was, you know, a little surprised to get that threatening letter. I don't even think that's a threatening letter or getting called into the office. Did you really think that was not going to happen, right? Like, we could talk about whether it should, anything else. Did you really think that that wasn't going to happen? Did you think that you were going to get out here and do this and people know that you work for Amazon and that wasn't nobody going to come holler at you and be like, yo, you tripping right now? Like, that's the nature of it. Look, everybody makes some measure of trade-offs when you go to work for these capitalists, man, these corporations. Look, if you're looking for the capitalists with a heart of gold, that ain't how this works. This game is not powered by good feelings. That's not what it is. Most people are making some measure of compromise on whatever job they work at. Most people have levels of compromise that they are not willing to make. And you do it, right? I'm ride with you if you decide, if you bite it enough to go ahead and do that, I'm there for you. I just couldn't believe that that woman was like, yeah, I was just criticizing the company. And yeah, I was a little scared to have them tell me that if I keep doing this, I'm going to get fired. Yes, 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 yes. That's how these things go.
The interesting part would be to know whether or not they went first to try and like do some.
Right. No, I don't know. I understand what you're saying.
Discussions internally, because Amazon had said like, oh, there's a forum for this. There's a spot for this where we can have these sorts of discussions internally and make change that way as opposed to making it public.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem though like they tried that route first. It didn't work. And then so they went public, you know?
Yeah. And by the way, that would be fair on the part of the workers if they felt like, yo, we tried to do what y'all said. Y'all wouldn't do it. So now we had to take this outside. I'm down on that. My problem is acting surprised when the boss calls you in after you did that. That's the only part. What did you think? Like if you bought it and you try to make this happen, then go out there and make it happen. Just don't act surprised when the boss is like, yo, be quiet. And you're like, nobody tells me to be quiet. All right, then don't. But they do tell you.
Our next story also comes from tech.
Hi, this is Drew Harwell. I'm a reporter at the Washington Post, and I just wrote about location tracking on college campuses. Several dozen universities across America are now turning on these location tracking systems that either use Bluetooth beacons or Wi-Fi networks to track when students are going to class or skipping class, how late they are to class, and even sort of gather insights on how often are they going to the library, how often are they leaving their dorms. All of this information ends up getting cobbled together into these, you know, student profiles, which then the colleges can use to, you know, either text students who are not coming to class to say, hey, what's going on? Where were you? Or even go to a more sophisticated level and start making predictions about how their mental health is doing. Say if a student stops going to the cafeteria or stops leaving the dorm, maybe there's some sort of food insecurity or depression issue, and then the college will respond in that way. The students here say it's a huge breach of privacy. A lot of them are not comfortable with the idea of a college keeping tabs on them 24/7 in terms of location. But the schools and some of the professors say this is a good tool. You know, they can nudge students into being better students. They can keep tabs on kids before it becomes sort of problematic. But, you know, this is the future of surveillance, and it's playing out on college campuses all across the country. And I think we're going to have to reckon with the fact of, are we okay with this level of privacy in surveillance, or do we want to push back a little bit?
Wait a minute, Gabe. You telling me that they're going to use tracking to make sure you go into class?
Yes.
What?
That's an interesting thing, because I would say that professors have one of two attitudes when it comes to attendance for students. It's either, hey, you're paying for it. If you're not showing up to class, that's not my problem. That's your problem. Or it's kind of like, no, you're showing up and I'm going to have a bunch of pop quizzes to make sure that you're showing up.
Yes. Right. That's basically it. So when I taught freshmen, what I would do is I would put 5 pop quizzes as something like 10% of the grade and take your top 4 of those 5 pop quizzes. So you could miss one and still be okay. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And that was the way to kind of, because freshmen, especially with economics, freshmen did kind of need the nudge to understand that they needed to come to class. But when I was a student, there was another way that you found out that you needed to go to class. And you know what that was called? Flunking stuff. Right? Like I realized how much I needed to go to class based on how that exam went when I had not been going to class. I can't imagine anybody on a college campus actually caring about whether these people voluntarily come to class, because if you got a class worth going to, then they gonna wind up having to come on their own, which leads me to think that they not tracking you to make sure you go to class. They tracking you for something else and then using this as a cover. because this doesn't provide a single benefit whatsoever. So tell me this, Gabe, if they track you and you're not in class, what are they going to do, come find you?
Drew described that they may like send a text and be like, yo, why aren't you going to class?
Yeah, because I'm not. How about that? Or somebody ought to get that text and then like reply to it at 2 p.m, like, sorry, just woke up. Like, Also, the other part about that, too, and this is a problem I have, college students are not children.
Yes, that's a fair point.
And but college students are not children, so on one hand, they deserve like a measure of freedom that an adult gets, but they also, you got to give them a measure of accountability that comes from being an adult. And that accountability is not enforced by letting them know that you're always watching them. It's like, okay, even when somebody ain't watching you, this thing waiting right around the corner to get you. And that's the way that you should go about this. But they inflating grades so high at this point that they scared to flunk anybody.
Yeah. I mean, it's like when you are leaving high school, leaving your parents and going to college, are you entering the, quote, real world, end quote? Or are you just being passed off from one father and mother to a institution that's supposed to serve as your father and mother?
Yeah, and here's the thing, man. For my friends who teach in college, man, they dealing with so many more phone calls and emails from parents.
Or yes.
People hollering at the dean and everything.
People would be shocked. My wife
I forgot. Yeah, you have familiarity with this.
Yeah, my wife is an academic advisor, and she gets calls and emails from parents all the time.
My mind is blown by that. Like, you have to go handle these things. So my parents are college professors. And so I grew up with an understanding of, like, you know, what was your responsibility as a college student or whatever. So I remember one time I was taking a summer school course, and my dad worked at the school, so I took the class for free. So this is an important variable, because basically my car got broken into one day, and the next day I had a test, but I had to take my car in. Keep in mind, this is the year 2000. There is no Uber, right? Just like easy way to get to campus or whatever, you know, because my car's broken into, all that stuff, whatever. I had to take it in. I tried to take it in early before class. I couldn't get out in time in order to, to make the exam. I missed the exam. I came the next day. I brought the man the invoice to be like, look, this is why I missed it. I remember he said, let's step outside. We stepped outside. He lit a cigarette and he looked at me and he said, well, you can see how much of your money you can get back. And I was like, okay, like, I got it. I knew that's what it was. It was a bad break. I knew that's what it was. And I told my mom about it. And I remember she asked me, she's like, well, do you want me to call about it? I'm like, no, I don't want you to call about it. Cause your parents are not supposed to call for you behind college. You know, and like, she wasn't so great on the idea of calling, you know, but I was like, no, I don't do that. Like, I got that. Like, don't you want to be grown? And it's so wild how we don't treat college students like they're grown, or even like they're grown right when they get out. Maybe I'm missing something. I don't know.
All right, this last one comes from Commerce.
My name is Maxwell Strawn, and I'm a senior editor at Vice. When a lot of us think of the stereotypical person who falls for a scam, I think we think of a helpless old lady with thick horn-rimmed glasses and an unsettling willingness to fork over her bank information. But these days, that stereotype is actually far from accurate. Tired depictions of naive old women have masked the fact that today it's computer-literate millennials and Gen Z who have the real problem with online scams. In fact, people ages 39 and under have been 25% more likely to report losing money to fraud than the 40-plus crowd over the past couple of years, at least according to the Federal Trade Commission. Things get even more bleak when it comes to online shopping scams. People in their 20s and 30s are more than twice as likely to report getting swindled there than older Americans. The truth is, many Americans who came of age before the internet have approached online payments with what is actually a healthy dose of skepticism, which has proven useful as the internet has transformed into particularly fertile ground for fraudsters. But younger people who have practically grown up online have displayed a comfort with handing over personal information that is now regularly backfiring on them. According to the FTC and the Better Business Bureau, people should be wary of ads they see on social media and fake websites that appear to be legitimate retail outlets. But what really concerns people who study scams is how often these scammers are also lurking within well-established third-party platforms like Amazon, Etsy, and eBay. And something else is compounding the problem. Lots of millennials aren't paying for things online with credit cards, which come with federal protections against scams. Instead, they're often opting to wire people money or use online payment systems like Venmo and PayPal, which do not offer the same protections. Experts I spoke with say it's critical that millennials and Gen Z start to realize that growing up on the internet doesn't make you less susceptible to scammers. In fact, there are signs it's having quite the opposite effect.
I found this to be very interesting. Now, I know one scam you can get me on, a t-shirt advertisement on Instagram.
Yes.
I feel like I got one of those that never showed up.
Well, I mean, everything there is so curated for you, right?
Yes.
I just have like an inner trust that this is a legitimate site because it's being advertised to me. I have bought something. I did get it, but I don't know. Have I been scammed?
You see, the thing for me is, like, I don't traffic on Facebook. It's just not what I do. But I want to go put this article up on Facebook so that all the old people can then share it and be like, see? Oh, you're acting like I can't take care of myself. What about you?
Exactly. You'd have to throw it up on Facebook because that's where old people be.
That's where they at. They are there. That's where the grandbabies are.
They probably didn't see the story because they're not around like that, you know?
Nah. I want to get this so they can throw it in their grandchildren's faces and be like, yeah, stupid children.
But even the layer about trusting PayPal or Venmo with your credit card information, I feel like people that are our age just kind of, who have grown up with the internet and grown up with these sorts of technologies, view it as just like, oh, no, this is a new innovation. It's safe.
Yeah, no, well, the level I hadn't thought about is what they said is if you use a credit card and you get scammed, then there are mechanisms in place for you to, like, get relief.
Oh, dude, emails all the time of like, hey, this class action lawsuit, you have a 10% gift card to Zappos.com from 10 years mm-hmm. ago.
But see, the thing with Venmo is because Venmo is, by definition, the way they try to, it's not a transaction, right? Venmo is just for exchanging money between friends, basically. There is no protection in that. I had never thought about that level.
Educating the masses here, man.
That's what we do.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. New year. New voicemail segment. Happy New Year, by the way.
Happy New Year to you too, sir. And if Ryan Cortez is listening, Happy New Year. He hates people saying Happy New Year after January 1.
What annoyed me the most was people getting Happy New Year and New Year's Day mixed up with New Year's Eve. People saying it was like, oh, you know, it's New Year's Day. It's like, no, it's New Year's Eve, by the way.
It's all New Year's. Yeah. Just call it one.
Yeah, just all New Year's, right? So we did this last year. I thought it was really fun doing it again this year. Make it a little tradition. New Year's resolutions, but for other people, for celebrities, athletes, coaches, the like. Our first comes from Deshaun.
My New Year's resolution is for Bill Polian to stop being a hater of Lamar Jackson and not make this a career. I think that'd be a good thing going forward is for him to let that go.
Yeah, I know. Polian has acknowledged he was wrong in saying the dude wasn't a quarterback. And then he voted Russell Wilson as the MVP.
Yeah.
But see, here's the thing, though, about MVP votes is that now that, like, the role that this network and just kind of sports coverage, but basically it's all like, you used to have more variance in the voting of all these things because you didn't have a constant national conversation about it. Now everybody's here. Everybody knows what all the talking points are. So everybody basically makes the same vote. So I'm not knocking Polian so much for not giving Lamar the MVP vote because Russell Wilson was really, really good. And the idea of like virtual unanimity on this voting, this is a very new concept.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a bummer for Polian that it was quite so unanimous so that it's like, oh, it's Polian
yep.
and three of his cronies at SiriusXM that are out to get Lamar.
Exactly.
But I also do love that the voting gets revealed so that you know who it is so that you can go after them because that's just hilarious.
Yeah, but there's always somebody trying to make a hustle out of one of these votes. You know what I mean?
Yes, indeed. All right, this next one comes from Karima in New York.
Resolutions, I think all those in the NBA who clearly it is time for them to come home and they just are refusing, i.e. LeBron. I think Kevin Durant really is too. I mean, for him, he probably just really needs to brush his hair and he just refuses. But I think those two things, like, it's time. Seeing the top of LeBron's head every game is really, really just crushing.
Wow, she brought it to the top of the food chain.
Come at the king, you best not miss.
Yeah, nah, both of them boys got the same problem, though. They got rectangular-shaped heads. It doesn't lend itself so well for coming home. Like me, I got a well-shaped dome. Works out well. Good symmetry, good shape, all that. Not everybody is so fortunate. Like, what high school would do, we used to call head. because he had a really, really big, and he had a really, 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 really big head. No, no, this is a true story. One of my teachers would tell this story about Head had a couple of brothers, and one of the brothers was in this teacher's class, and she's like, and he's like, oh, there goes my brother. She's like, oh, who's your brother? He's like, oh, the one with the big old head. And she's like, don't say that. He's like, psh, whatever. Hey, Head, come on over here, because he was Head. Like, that was what it was. But the thing was, it was the shape. He had a rectangular shaped dome, and that's a bad break.
Oh, gosh. And it's also to the pattern of balding.
Yeah.
When it comes to these guys, like losing hair in the back as opposed to losing hair up in the corners in the front.
That's true. See, I lost it in the corners, man. Like, if I had lost just a little bit in the back, it wouldn't be so bad. I could kind of, or you know, the right spot, I could kind of make that work. I'm 6'4". You know, like LeBron's problem is people got cameras up there. But I could have made it happen, man. But I wound up in that situation with the corners. And I looked in the mirror the other day, man. I let it grow a little bit during the holiday because I didn't feel like doing nothing, man. My shit looked like the Whataburger logo. Looked like I'm putting on for Dub C.
Oh, God. But isn't that a graceful? You don't think that the Widow's Peak balding is graceful?
Two Americas, Gabe. Two Americas.
I would rather take that than what's going on with LeBron.
I agree. I'm just telling you that there's a certain measure of privilege that comes in the way you can bald gracefully without having to just take it all the way home. White dudes ain't never got to take it all the way home. We do. And I'm not even blaming like white folks for that because it be your own people. They be. Anyway, y'all got it easy.
All right. This next one comes from Pete in Grosse Pointe.
New Year's resolution is for Ben Simmons to shoot the basketball. I never understood why somebody as talented as that doesn't want to shoot the ball. I mean, if you go to any pickup game, any type of people playing basketball, you have all these people who get the ball and they're going to shoot it. I mean, even me, I'm going to shoot it and I might not even be open. But, like, I just don't understand why Ben Simmons gets away with not shooting the ball. If you remember the 2004 Pistons, I mean, Ben Wallace had no offensive capability at all. But when he was open, he shot the ball. And to me, if Ben Wallace can teach you something about shooting from the perimeter, you have a giant hole in your game.
That's a great point. I need Ben Simmons to start taking some of these shots because he's messing up the chemistry on my television show because Pablo is insistent that he should only shoot when he feels comfortable. And that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. And I cannot be polite about it. This is absurd. This is absurd. Let me pull up this number. This should tell you everything you need to know about Ben Simmons. By the way, Gabe, did you know that between 3 and 10 feet, Ben Simmons can't even make 40% of his shots?
Oof. I did not know that.
Yeah, no, it's kind of startling, isn't it? Let me find this number here, because I'm just looking at this cat like this don't make no sense. Okay, so what percentage of Ben Simmons' shots do you think are from 10 feet or closer?
85.
93.8.
Pablo's playing as good of defense as Ben Simmons is. Ben Simmons is for the Sixers.
Yes, yes. By the way, 92.8, not 93. Either way, what in the world is this? I've never seen anything like this before. And he's a bad free throw shooter. And so you're not going to tell me that this also is not affecting his ability to get to the rim. And he's generally good at that. But the playoffs are going to come. They're just going to start putting bodies on him. And then you know what he's going to do? Stop going to the basket. And I've never seen anybody this talented who didn't want to shoot. Never. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsors, NetSuite and ZipRecruiter. Also, thanks to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Jay Green of The Washington Post. Check out his story on Amazon threatening to fire critics of their environmental policies at TheWashingtonPost.com. Thanks to Drew Harwell of The Washington Post. Check out his story about colleges tracking students using their phones. That's also at TheWashingtonPost.com. And thank you to Maxwell Strahan of Vice. Check out his story on millennials getting scammed more than their grandparents. Remember to subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You're going to give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.